Let's begin. A few minutes late, I apologize. So we left off yesterday with on today's daf is Yud Zayin 17. We left off Tes Zayin Amud Beis. Heviru Lefanei Kos Shabasor. Remember again, the Mishnah explained. The Mishnah was discussing the different things that could attest to the fact that she was a basula. One of the things that the Mishnah mentioned was they passed before her a Kos Shabasor, a cup. Ultimately, again, of announcement that she was a basula. My Kos Shabasor. So, what does it mean a Kos Shabasor? A cup of announcement. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rav Adi Bar Ava Kos Yayin Shel Truma Ma'avirin Lefaneha." They would go ahead and they would pass a cup of Truma wine before her, and they would say, "Kolomar Rai Riuya Haisazu Leechol B'Truma." That this one, because she was a Basula, technically speaking, could have married a Kohen, and therefore was fit to go ahead and eat Truma. So the Gemara says, "Maskef L'Rat Papa Atva Amana Milo Achla B'Truma." But once again, you're trying to say that an Amana, a widow who marries a Kohen, is not permitted to eat Truma. We know that's not the case. Ela Amar Rav Papa. Zu reishis kitruma reishis. The rest, rather, they pass before her a cup of truma wine to say, just as truma is the first, i.e., it's the first portion that's taken, that's tithe, so to again, this act of relations that she is going to have with her husband is also the first act of relations. Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda says, Chavish shayan ma'avir lefaneha. They used to, at a wedding, they used to pass a barrel of wine before the kala. Amar Rav Ada Bar Ava, Besula Ma'avirun Lefaneha Stuma. For a Besula, for a woman who's getting married for the first time, they would pass a sealed barrel, indicating that in fact she was a Besula. Bu'ula Ma'avirun Lefaneha Pesucha. And for a Bu'ula, for a woman who had relations before, ultimately they would pass before her an open barrel. So the Gemara says, Amai, why are we doing this? Ne'aver Kamei Besula, V'Kamei Bu'ula Lo Na'aver Klal. Why don't you just go ahead and just pass the barrel of wine before a basula, and for an almana, don't do anything at all. To which the Gemara answers, Zinnin de tafsa masayim, va amra ana basula havoy. Because there are times where what? There are times where ultimately she will claim that she is entitled to masayim, that she is entitled to 200 zuz, and she will say, what happened? She will say that lemaisa, again, I'm a basula, v'hai delo avru kamai asnusehu de'isnisu. And the fact that they did not pass a barrel before me, that's just because, why? Something happened. You know, they were out of wine that particular day. Therefore, again, they purposely passed an open barrel before a ba'ula and a closed barrel before a basula. So we'll say now he comes. Therefore, again, now going back to the Mishnah, that's why the Mishnah says if they used this kos shel basura, that was indicative of the fact that lamaisa she was a basula. So remember, the Mishnah essentially says that in these situations where there's a machlokas about what her status was at the time of the wedding, if you're able to prove that some of these, what we'll call celebratory aspects of a basula wedding were present, then that indicates, albeit it's circumstantial evidence, but albeit that proves the fact that she was in fact a basula. So now the Gemara comes to a beautiful, beautiful idea. Tanu Rabbanan, Ketzad Meraktin Lifnei HaKala. The Rabbah says, now literally it translates is, how do we dance before the Kala? Now the Gemara is not asking a dance move question, but Rabbi, if you look at Rashi says, Ketzad Meraktin Ma Omrim Lifaneha. What is it? What is it appropriate? What is appropriate to say to a kala at the wedding? So Beishamai and Beishamai say, top of Yud Zayin, kala kamos shehi. So Beishamai says that you should praise a kala the way she is. What does that mean? Rashi says, lefi yofyaha v'chashivusa mekalsanosa. Beishamai says you have to be, essentially you have to be honest in your praise, right? That you have to go ahead and praise her in a way that's appropriate, but more importantly, that's honest. Ubeisilo and Beisilo say no, kala na'a v'chasuda. Every single kala is beautiful, na'a v'chasuda. Rashi says over here, chut shel chased mashuch aleha. Every single kala has exceptional charm. Doesn't matter if she's pretty, if she's not pretty. Every kala is not a vechasuda. So listen to this. So first of all, look at Tosos for just a moment. So Tosos writes on the top, kala kamo shehi. Tosos says, yim yesh bamum yishtiku v'lo yishabchua. So and according to Beis Shammai, if she's blemished, meaning let's say she's just not pretty, so then don't say anything. Don't say anything and don't praise her. Inami yishabchua b'davar na'a sheyesh ba. or compliment her for what's nice about her. Kigon be'ineha o be'adeha imheim yafos. So Beis Shammai says, if she's not pretty, tell her, wow, you know, you have beautiful hands. Now, by the way, don't try that one at home. Right? But the idea, right? So that Beis Shammai says, is find something that is beautiful about her and compliment that. Listen to us. Ubeisil say, no. Yishabchu ha'legamre, you have to go ahead and use absolute praise. No evechasuda. T'cheshamaskirin mashiyisha l'shvach nichlal d'shar l'gnai. Because Beis Hillel will say, if you tell her that she has nice hands, you know what every single woman hears when you tell her that she has nice hands, right? What she's hearing is, well, what about the rest, right? So the idea is, if you just highlight and you compliment one part of her, ultimately all that's going to do is to accentuate the fact that the rest, that perhaps she's not so pretty. So therefore, Beis Hillel says the only way to compliment the kala is na'aveh chasuda. Every single kala is beautiful. Every single kala has chesed. So fundamental machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. So the Gemara says, "Amar lahen Beis Shammai Beis Hillel." So Beis Shammai said to Beis Hillel, "Hare shahaisa chi geres usuma omrim la kala na'aveh chasuda." So Beis Shammai says, "Beis Hillel, let me ask you: if the kala was lame, if the kala was crippled, or if the kala was blind, are you going to tell her na'aveh chasuda?" Meaning, what Beis Shammai is saying to Beis Hillel is, "I don't understand. Let's say there's a situation, an objective situation, where she's not Noah Vechasuda. So are you going to say those words, even though it's pashit untrue? V'ha-Torah amra, midvar sheker tirchak. Yet the Torah tells us what? Don't lie. Distance yourself from any kind of falsehood. So listen to this. Amr lahen beisil beis shamay. So beisil said to beis shamay ledivreichem. Let's use your logic. Mi shalakach mekach ra min ashuk. Yishab chenu be'inav. Let's say someone makes a purchase, and it turns out that he didn't make a good purchase. So what should you do? Should you praise the purchase in his eyes, or should you go ahead and tell him or highlight the fact that it's an imperfect purchase? Havi Omer, Beis Hillel says, I say, Yishabchenu Be'inov, I say the truth is like this. Rabosei, you know, if you see a person has made a decision, and he's locked into that decision, there's absolutely nothing to be gained by making him feel bad about that decision. Instead, what should you do? Go ahead and find something redeeming about the decision that he made and compliment him, make him feel good. So therefore, Beis Hillel says to Beis Shammai, look, if he's married to this woman, he's married to this woman, you might as well make him feel good about the fact that he married her and not chas v'shalom highlight the fact that perhaps she's not the prettiest woman. Therefore, again, Beis Hillel sticks to his gun and says, every single kala is no'e v'chasuda. Every single kala is beautiful and has chen, and has incredible chesed about her. So the Gemara says, Mikanam u'chachamim, I will say, now, based on this approach of Beis Hillel v'chachamim, said, I will say, this is a very profound yisod in life. The olam tehe da'ato shel adam mu'ureves imabrios. I will say, a person should always try to make sure that literally his da'as, right, the way he acts, is kind and pleasant with others. I will say, very important, yisod, that it's important to be able to get along with people. If you are an abrasive or sarcastic or cynical personality and you can't get along with people, that's not the way to live life. The fact, what the Gemara is saying over here, is the idea, what's behind Beis Hillel's logic? Why does Beis Hillel say, kala no'a vechasuda to every single kala? So first of all, we'll see, there's another idea that's going to come up from the Gemara in just a little bit, namely, that for every single chasan, he finds the chen in his kala, right? Just because I don't think she's pretty, who cares? I don't need to think she's pretty, she's not my wife. But the guy who's marrying her clearly finds something redeeming in her, and therefore I'm saying, for you, she's a kala no'a vechasuda. Furthermore, again, if somebody's made a decision, the best thing you could do is bolster their decision, aside from when people make bad decisions in life. But assuming a person is making the good decision for them, the idea is be the kind of person that gets along with other people. If you're always abrasive, if you're always friction, if you're always contrarian, it's just not the way to live. Ki aser avdimi amar hachi. So Rav Dimi came along, he said, when in Eretz Yisrael, they used to go ahead and sing the following in front of the Kala in Eretz Yisrael. Listen to this, how beautiful this is. Lo kichol velo sirak velo pirkos v'ya'al aschein. You Kala, you don't need kichol. Kichol is eyeshadow, sirak is blush, and pirkos is braiding of the hair. So you Kala, you're so beautiful that you do not require makeup, you do not require fancy hairstyles, v'ya'al aschein. And yet, you still go ahead and you emote. You emote such incredible charm and such incredible chen. So the Gemara just pauses here for just a moment, leaves the wedding. The Gemara says, "Ki samchu rabbanan Rabbi Zeira." Listen to how beautiful this is. When the rabbanan conferred smicha upon Rabbi Zeira, they sang to him the following: "Shari lehachi, Lo kichol, velo sirak, velo pirkos, v'ya'al aschein. So they said, and they were saying this about Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Zeira, you're so beautiful, i.e. in your spirituality, that you don't need any of the other external accoutrements. You don't need, I mean, literally it means the eyeshadow, the blush, and the braiding of the hair. If you look at Rashi for just a moment, actually, I'm sorry, Rashi doesn't comment on this. Ki yisam chrabana Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Asi, so the idea is that when they were giving him smicha, they were saying, you're such a talmid chacham, you're so wonderful, that you don't need fancy clothing, you don't even need fancy titles, and you emote such an incredible chin. Ki samchu rabbanu Rabbi Ami Rabbi Asi, when the rabbis conferred smicha upon Rabbi Ami Rabbi Asi, shar lehachi, they sang the following, kol min din v'chol min din samuchu lano. So anyone who is like this one, and anyone who is like this one, should be given smicha. However, excuse me, let me read that again. Kol min din v'chol min din simuchu lanu. So lo tismuchu lanu lo min sarmisin v'lo min sarmitin. But we should not give smicha to the sarmisin and not to the sarmitin. So Rav Ashi, look at Rashi just a moment. Sarmisin, misarsin halacha behevech tamen. People who go ahead and twist around halacha to suit their own needs. So Rav Ashi, you know, as we all know, it is very easy. You know, if you want to find the shita for something, you can always find the shita for something. You can always find an opinion that backs up even the most craziest things. So there are people who manipulate halacha for the sake of their own. They know what they want to do, or they know what agenda item they have, and so they're going to manipulate halacha to suit their own needs. So they said, so when they gave smicha to Rabbi Aaron and Rabbi Asi, they were extolling these two individuals as paradigms of who smicha should be conferred upon. And they were saying, we shouldn't give smicha to the sarmisin, to people who manipulate halacha for their own benefit. V'lomenas sarmutin. So Rashi says, sarmutin is lashon smartutin. So smartutin are rags. So rags, just like a rag doesn't fully cover the body, so too there are people that are not well versed enough in Torah to be able to paskin halacha, because they only have like a patchwork of Torah. V'amri lomin chamisin v'lomin turmisin. And others say that they said we should not give smicha to the chamisin and not to the turmisin. So look at Rashi. What's chamisin? Rashi says, omrin chamishes hatam. So chamisin are people who only give literally 1/5 of the reasoning. That when they teach things, when they say things, their statements are not coherent and it's difficult for people to understand. Like someone who only gives 1/5 of the Torah they know. Or turmisin is actually very interesting. So the Marsha comments on this. Rashi says, lo isparish. Rashi says, turmisin, I don't know what this means. Now, Marsha says, turmisin, we know, is a lupine. A lupine. So turmisin, we know that you have to cook it for a very long time in order for it to become edible. So this turmisin represents, and if you don't, it's bitter. So turmisin represents people who are bitter, that you shouldn't give smicha to people who are bitter, somebody who has a negative life outlook, because such a person will not really be a credit to Klal Yisrael. Rabbi Avohu, Kehava Asimim Sifta, Lebe Kesar, so we'll say again, another story. Rabbi Avohu, when he would go from the yeshiva to the house of the Caesar. So apparently, Rabbi Avohu was very connected with the government and used to speak with the Caesar about many things. So then when he would go from the yeshiva to the Beit Kesar, Nafkin Amasa de Beit Kesar La'ape. Dumse, right? They would go ahead. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Nafka amsa de bekeser laape. So the women of the Caesar's home, the matrons, the Roman matrons, would come out to greet him. Umesharin lehachi, and they would sing the following to him. Rava daame, right? Literally, Rebbe of his people, teacher of his people. Umedabrana duumasi, leader of his nation. Botsina dinuhura, lit candle. Baruch Masyech Lishlom, your coming here should be in peace. Amru Alava Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eloi, they used to say about Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eloi, Shahaya Notel, but so listen to how beautiful this is. Shahaya Notel Bad Shalhadas, Omerakid Lifne Hakala. Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eloi, Rabbi Yehuda, who was one of the ranking sages, used to take a branch, a myrtle branch, Bad Shalhadas, a myrtle branch, and he would dance in front of the Kala. Va Omer Kala Noe Vechasuda. And he would say, He would say to the Kala that she is Noa Vechasuda, that she is beautiful and has incredible chesed. Rabbi Yehuda, in this context, chesed really means, as we said before, more like charm or chin. She has incredible chesed. Just so you should know, by the way, we paskin in their previous machlokas, like Beis Hillel. And therefore, again, the halacha is we tell the Kala, no matter who or what she is, we tell her Kala Noa Vechasuda. We tell every single Kala that she is beautiful and ultimately, again, has incredible chin, incredible charm to her. So Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eloi, Eloi used to dance in front of the Kala with the branch of Hadassim. And what happened? Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak, listen to this, Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak, Meraki Ratlos. Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak was not satisfied with dancing with one branch, but rather he would dance with three. Now, if you look at Rashi, Rashi says, Ratlos, Shalosh Badin, he would have three branches, Zorek Achas, Umekabal Achas. In other words, what did he do? He juggled. He used to juggle three myrtle branches while dancing in front of the Kala. Amr Rabbi Zera, Kamachsif Lon Saba. So we'll say, listen to this. So Rabbi Zera said, the old man is embarrassing us. Rabbi Zera, and this is referring to Rabbi Huda Bar Eloi. So Rabbi Zera, when he would see Rabbi Huda Bar Eloi going ahead and dancing in front of the Kala with the myrtle branch, so Rabbi Zera would say, it's ridiculous, you shouldn't be doing this. Right? He's a Talmud Chacham. Look at Rashi. Rashi says over here, Mach Siflan Sabah Shemazalzel Bekavot Tamidi Chachamim. He is denigrating the covet of Torah scholars, Vinoig Kalus Rosh Biatzmo, and he's treating himself too lightly. So therefore, again, Rabbi Zera was giving him, Rabbi Zera said, it's not appropriate that Rabbi Huda Bar Eloi is dancing in front of the Kala with myrtle branch. You shouldn't be doing this. Listen to this. Kinach Nafshe, when Rabbi Huda Bar Eloi died, Ifsik Amuda Denura Bein Didei Lekulei Alma. A pillar of fire came down from the heavens and literally blocked, or created a barrier between the bed on which Rabbi Huda Bar Eloi was resting and everyone else. The idea of this fire indicated that the person who had died was so kadosh that no one else was permitted to approach the funeral bier. Ugemiri, and we have a tradition, Delo ifsik amuda denura ela ilechad bidara ilatrebidara. We have a tradition that this idea that the pillar of fire only comes down for one or two people in every single generation, i.e., that pillar of fire indicates that this person who passed away was one of the leaders of the entire generation. So why did Rabbi Huda Bar Eloi? Why did Rabbi Huda Bar Eloi merit this particular fire to descend from heaven to after his death? So Rabbi Zera, Ahan Yalei Shutuse L'Saba. Bless you. So Rabbi Zera said that literally the Shutuse helped the Saba. Now what does Shutuse mean? Rashi says, Shutise, Shut Shalhado Shem Rakibas. So we'll say this is Shutuse means the branch. The branch, it was the branch of the Hados that he used to dance with. That was the merit that he had that made him singular in his generation. The fact that he was willing to go ahead and put his own covet on the side to make the Chasan and Kala happy. So that was the merit that he had. Va'amrili, others say no, Shetuse L'Saba. Others say it was the Shtus, right? The shtick, that again, same idea. It was the shtick that he did at the weddings, the fact that he danced in front of the Kala with the myrtle branches, that that's ultimately, again, that gave him the incredible zechus. Va'amrili, others say, Shitase L'Saba. We'll say, now, what does it mean, Shitase L'Saba? Shitase U'minhago. The Shitos and Minhagim that he had throughout life, those are what distinguished him from amongst his other rabbinic colleagues and made him the singular great person in his generation. Rav Acha, listen to this, we'll say, this is actually pretty wild. Rav Acha, Markiv Le'akasve Umeraked. Rav Acha used to put the Kala on his shoulders and dance with her. Amli Rabbanan. So we'll say, Amli Rabbanan. So the rabbi said to her, I don't think, Anan, Mahu Lime Avarachi. So literally it means they asked, could we do this also? I don't know, what they're really asking is, really? Right? Really? Like this is actually okay, what it is that you're doing? So listen to this. Amar Lahu, he said to them, Idamyan Aleichu Kikishura Lechaye, Ve'imlo Lo. Literally, if she is like a beam to you, then fine. And if not, no. In other words, what Rav Acha was saying was the following. If, when I do this, I don't have any impure thoughts, right? I'm able to do this ultimately, again, without having any impure thoughts about the Kala. So if you're on the level that you don't have any impure thoughts, then Ein Achinami, you could do the same. But if Lemais, again, you will have impure thoughts, which, of course, everyone perhaps besides Rav Acha would ultimately, then Lemaisa, you are not permitted to do this. Amrit will say, it is fascinating just to see practices that if somebody were to say it today, you'd say that's absolute apikorsos, absolute apikorsos. And yet again, it's just interesting to see how again, norms develop. Now you can understand, of course, why this one did not exactly trickle down throughout the generations, right? It's kind of understandable. No Hasidic communities do this. What happened now? Again, all right, so just because Rav Fishel brought this up, so it's brought down the Darchei Tshuva brings down, he says that based on this, the custom also developed to dance with the Kala. And what they used to do is what they call today a mitzvah dance. That ultimately, again, one party would hold on to a cloth or whatever it is, and someone else. Now, in most communities, Darchei Tshuva brings down, they stopped doing the mitzvah dance as well because they felt it was a lack of tznius. Except in the Hasidic communities where the mitzvah tans. But if you've ever seen a mitzvah tans occur in a Hasidic community, they have like a gartel the size of a football field, right? And so one's got here, so mamish, like there's absolutely no. So, but again, but yes, you're correct. The mitzvah tans does have its derivations over here in this particular Gemara as well. So the Gemara is, what's like? I'm Rabbi Shua, I know everybody gets excited. Kala's on the shoulders, everything goes nuts. All right, so the Gemara says the following. So Amar Reb Shmuel Bar Nachmani, Amar Reb Yochanan, Mutar Listakel Bifnei Kala, Bifnei Kala, Kol Shiva, it is permitted to go ahead and look directly at the Kala all 7 days, all of the Sheva Brachas. The Chavava Abaylan, I must say, it's very important to Halacha. The Halacha is that one is not supposed to look at any woman for the sake of deriving pleasure. Or meaning, I'm not permitted to look at, obviously I'm permitted to make eye contact with a person, I'm talking to them, but I'm not permitted to dafka gaze at a woman in order to benefit from her beauty. Because I think she's beautiful, I don't want to look at her. All the more so, one is not permitted to do that with a married woman. So the Gemara says, whatever Rabbi Yonah's son says, that when it comes to a kala during Sheva Brachos, I am permitted to dafka look at the kala of the Sheva Brachos. Why? Because when the husband sees that everyone is looking at his wife because she's so beautiful, what does that do? That endears her to him even more. The less hilchas akavase. But the Gemara says, we do not paskin like this. And even during Sheva Brachos, again, we do not gaze at the kala for the sake of gazing at her beauty. Tan Rabbanan. So what's the rabbis taught? Ma'avirin es hamesim lifnei akala. So it's an interesting halacha. If you look at Rashi, ma'avirin, kishakala yotza mi beis aviyah lebeis chasunasa, v'nosei meis yotzim ubezu, uchlunos harbe, uchlunusis harbe, v'in rotzilis ari ma'avirin es hamesim derech acher. So also listen to this. Let's say you have a wedding procession and the funeral procession that are going to go ahead and utilize the same road. So the halacha is we allow the wedding procession to go before the funeral procession. But if there's a wedding procession, a funeral procession, and a monarchical procession, and everybody needs to utilize the same road, both the wedding and funeral processions have to wait and let the king go first. The Gemara says, "Amar lav al Agrippas Hamelech." So we learned. So they said about Agrippas the king, "Sha'avar melifnei kala." That one time Agrippas was traveling, and he saw there was a wedding procession, and he allowed the wedding procession to go first. V'shabchu chachamim, and the rabbis extolled him. The rabbis praised him for allowing the wedding party to go first. Shabchu, so they praised him. Mechlal the shapir of it. That would indicate that they thought that what he did was correct. V'homer Rabashi afil lemando amar nasi shemachlal kvodo kvodo machol melech shemachlal kvodo ein kvodo machol. But 1 second, Agrippus wasn't even allowed to do this. So it's very important to sod, because even according to the mandam who says that a nasi. Now remember, the nasi was the name of the leader of the Jewish people after already the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, when we were no longer a fully autonomous nation. So the Nasi was like the head, but the Nasi wasn't a king. So even according to the Mandam who says that a Nasi is permitted to forgive his kavod, a king is not permitted to forgive his kavod. So when the king walks in the room, I have to stand up. And if the king says, no, it's okay, you don't have to stand up. It doesn't matter. I still have to stand up. If that's the case, the Amar Mar, because we learn, Som Tasim Alecha Melech. So the Pasuk says, you have to place upon you a king, Shatehe Amasu Imasu Alecha, that the fear and the reverence of the king has to be on you. Well, you know, I've often thought to myself that one of the interesting things I think that's going to happen when Mashiach comes is, you know, Malchus Beis David is going to be restored. It'll be interesting to see how we react to a king. Because if there's one thing that we really don't have in our generation, and the generation as a whole, is respect for authority. We're very contrarian group. We don't really like to respect authority all that much, especially absolute authority. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens when a Mashiach comes and suddenly we're going to have a melech. And this man is mamish going to have like power of life and death over us. How are we really going to have to submit? It's just interesting to think about. In any event, the Gemara says, so how was Agrippas permitted to go ahead and allow the wedding procession to go in front of him? After all, a king is not permitted to be mochel on his kavod. To which the Gemara says, Parshas Drachim Havi. It was a crossroads. And I will say, if you look at Rashi in just a moment, so Rashi is Parshas Drachim Hava. Below Nikar Shava Milfaneha Ela Kilu Hutzarach Lifnos LaOsa Derech. So I'll say, so again, meaning because it was a crossroads, the king made it look like he was going in a different direction. Therefore, because he made it look like he was going in a different direction, it didn't look like he was being mochel on his covet. Okay, so the Gemara goes weiter. Turn around, so we'll say we learned. Mevatlin Talmud Torah lahotzas hamis. So this is actually very interesting. So the halacha is that we're mevatl Talmud Torah to take care of the burial needs of an individual. Right, so meaning, if somebody needs to be buried, we stop all learning in order to take care of the dead. Ula hachnasas kala, and same thing to go ahead and take care of a kala on her wedding day, or on her wedding day. Omer of Rabbi Huda Rabbi Loi, so they used to say about Rabbi Huda Bar Iloi, shay mevatel Talmud Torah lahotzas hames, that he would stop his learning in order to escort the dead. Ula hachnasas kala, as well as to escort the kala. So when is this true? Kishain imo kol tzarcho. So we'll say, when do you have to stop your learning? For achnasas kala, or for otzas ames, that's when there aren't sufficient people to be able to take care of the burial needs or the achnasas kala needs. However, aval, yesh imo kol tzarcho, in mevatlin, but if there are enough people to take care of the burial, or there are enough people to ultimately go out and take care of the achnasas kala, then you are not mevatel Talmud Torah. Now, I will say, now the Gemara says something very interesting, which we'll come back to a little bit more tomorrow. V'kama kol tzarcho. Now, what does that mean, that a person, let's say, at his levaya, has all of the burial needs are attended to? So the Gemara says, v'kama kol tzarcho, Amar Shmuel Bar Ini Mishmei Dirav Treser Alfei Gavri. It means 12,000 people. Vishisa Alfi Shipuri, and 6,000 people to blow shofars. That's called Tzarcho, right? So let's say the idea over here, by the way, they used to blow shofros. They used to blow shofars. Rashi says, Machrizin Alav Shiavo Lechabdo. They used to blow shofars at weddings as almost like a sign that there was a levaya taking place, that people should come to give cover to the mace. So the Gemara says, others say, no, 13,000 people. And among those 13,000, you should have 6,000 that go out and blow the shofar. So Ula Amar Ula said, enough people to stretch from the gate of the city all the way to the cemetery. That the giving of the Torah, the taking of the Torah, is like the giving of the Torah. We'll say, now death is referred to as the taking of the Torah. It's actually a very dramatic statement that it's called the taking of the Torah. Why? Because again, each person, each neshama is a Torah unto itself. So just like Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah, death is when he takes his Torah back, so to speak. Just like the giving of the Torah was 600,000 people. Af netilasa b'shishim revo. So too, again, the taking of the Torah, death, levaya, is also called tzorcho, means 600,000 people. V'hani mili, and this is talking about what? Leman dekari v'tani. This is talking about one who learned Chumash and learned Mishnah. Now the inference of this in Rashi is aval adayin lo shana tamidim, but he didn't teach Talmidim. However, Amud Beis, aval leman demasni, but to one who taught Torah, to achirim, to others, less le shiura. Such a person, ultimately, again, there is no shear, there is no amount, there is no cap for the number of people that would need to go ahead and attend that levaya, and therefore everybody would be obligated to stop their Talmud Torah in order to attend that levaya. Rash is less le shiura, or mamela shamin and deleman delo kari velotani in mevatlin im yeshlo misaskin kide kavura ba'alma b'shil tos ravachem atzeking. So Rashi just brings down over here something very important. Rashi says that lemaisa, when it comes to someone who did not teach Torah, really all we need is you have to make sure there's enough people to go ahead and take care of the burial. That's the idea, as Rashi quotes over here. And that indeed is halacha lemaisa. We don't need 600,000 people. For a person who taught Torah, so in such a situation like that, then lemaisa, we are obligated to be mechabi that person with as many people as possible. If you look at Tosus for just a moment, Tosus says, avamad demasni les leshura, b'shi'il tos ravachai kasuv, umameila shamina leman delo kari velotani, ein mevatlin imyeshlo misaskin kidei kivura. Then in the shi'il tos ravachai, they said that for someone who didn't teach Torah, but someone who learned, so as long as there's enough people to take care of the levaya, you don't have to be mevatel Talmud Torah. V'nira l'ri, de le'ingin melacha, mevatlin b'nei kolayir, v'asr afil leman delo kari velotani, de lemaflig midi be'il megachin. So it's actually interesting. Tosus quotes an opinion that lemaisa, again, wherever there's levaya in the town, we do close the shops in order to make sure that the burial real needs of the individual are met. Then I'll say, obviously, these type of halachos are mentioned in situations where you don't have a dedicated body. So, for example, in a community where you have, let's say, a chevra kadisha, and it's known that the needs of the deceased are going to go ahead and be cared for, so there's not necessarily a din to go ahead and close down all of the businesses. But, of course, someone who taught Torah, a Talmud Chacham, so there is the obligation to be mevatel even Talmud Torah in order to go to attend the levai of such an individual. Back to the Mishnah. So remember, the Mishnah was giving examples of circumstantial types of evidence that indicate that what? That the woman was a besula at the time of her wedding. Okay, so for one of the examples was if she went out with a henuma. So the Gemara says, what is henuma? My henuma. Surchav b'apap mishmei dizi'iri amar tanua da'asa. Literally, it's a circular myrtle branched chuppah that apparently for besulos, they used to go and make a special chuppah that was made out of myrtle branches, hadasim, and it was made in a circular. So if there's edus that she had this kind of chuppah, that's indicative that she was in fact a besula. Rabbi Yochanan says, Karisa diminamna ba kalsa. That what is a hinuma? A hinuma is a veil that literally she's able to doze behind it. Now what does that mean? Look at Rashi. Karisa tsif asharosha, literally a veil on her head. Mishurvav alinaha kimosha osamim komenu. Rashi said like the type of veil that we do in our places. Upamim sheminamenes besocha mitoch shein eneha megulin. Olakach nikra hinuma ashim tenuma. The veil is so thick that what happens if the kala dozes a little, no one really is able to see. It's very interesting. So Rashi, this was the kind of veil that they were using already in times of the Gemara, and they were using in the times of Rashi as well. Therefore, it's called a hinuma from Lashon of tenuma, which means to doze. Okay, so machlokis about what hinuma means, but the idea is whether it's the circular myrtle branch chuppah or it's the thick veil. The idea is if there's testimony that when she got married, she was wearing or using these items, that's proof that she is in fact a besula. Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka was the one who said that also the giving out of parched grain is also an indication that what? That she was a besula. So the Gemara says, Tana, so all of the things mentioned in the Mishnah, the hinuma and the parched grain and all the other things, hair down, all of these things were all done in Yehuda. But in Bava, what was the sign, meaning what was different about a basula wedding? So Amarav, Dardugi de Mishcha, Areshad Rabbanav. Also, this is very interesting. That in Bava, what they used to do is, they used to rub oil on the heads of the rabbis. That at a besula's wedding, at a sign of celebration, they would rub oil on the heads of the rabbis. So I'm supposed to first of all look at Rashi. Rashi says, Dardugi Mishcha, Hanoshim Nosnim Shema Brosh HaTalmid V'Shavos. The women would place oil on the head of the rabbis and rub the oil in their heads. Okay. So I said, Amalir HaPapal HaBaye, Mishcha. Okay, like, let's just finish. Mishcha Dechafi Fusa Kam. See, on days like this, you could even brew decaf. You could punch and brew decaf. So the Gemara says, Amalir HaPapal HaBaye, Mishcha Dechafi Fusa Kam. Did the rabbis need a shampoo? I mean, what are you talking about? First of all, so that's how people would shampoo. So Talmudic shampoo was oil. The truth is, oil was used for everything. It's mamish. It's good to know. Cooking, shampooing, cleaning. So what happens? So the rabbis need a shampoo that at the weddings of the basula on Bavel, so they're rubbing the oil in their heads. So listen to this. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry. Visually Fusa Karmar, Amar Lay. So we'll say, so Rapapa said, excuse me, so Abai said back to Rapapa, Yasma, you orphan. Meaning we'll say, now this was an insult. Orphan means just as an orphan doesn't have parents, you don't have reason. You orphan. Lo av dalach imach. Dardugi Mishcha Resha Dirabanam Bishas Maisa. Did your own mother not rub oil in the hands of the rabbis at your own wedding? Meaning you're saying like you never saw this before. This mamish happened at your wedding. Kiha Dahumi Rabbanam Di Asikle Lebrei Bei Rabba Barula. Because there was, for example, a story of one of the Tamidi Chachamim who arranged a shidduch for his son with one of the daughters or one of the women of the home of Rabbi Bar Ula. Others say Rabbi Bar Ula yasek lebrei kiyahu mirabana. Or others say no. The story was that Rabbi Bar Ula arranged a shidduch for his son with one of the women from this Talmid Chacham's family. And what happened? V'dardig mishchalei shidir abanam b'shas ma'isa. And they would rub oil in the heads of the rabbis. And they rubbed oil in the heads of the rabbis at the wedding. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, look at Rashi for just a moment over here. Rashi says, Fine. B'shas ma'as, we have to do it. Amal tamai. So what about namana? So we'll say, so that's all true at the wedding of a basula. So now we know what we have is in Bavel, at a wedding of a basula, they used to rub oil in the heads of tamidi chachamim. What about at the wedding of an amana? Tani Rav Yosef, armalta les nekisni. So which the Gemara says that at the wedding of an amana, they would not hand out the kisni. They would not hand out this parched grain. Rashi says, "Ein la kloyos." They would not hand out parched grains. And Rashi's vizes simon. And this was the simon, ultimately, again, that it was the wedding of an amana. So we'll say what comes out from this sugya is that it's clear that different places had specific customs associated with the wedding of a basula. So once you had that, then lemaisa, again, that indicated that halach lemaisa was the wedding of a basula. Therefore, in the event that there's a between husband and wife, she was a basula or a ba'ula, if we're able to show that these type of events, these type of practices occurred at the wedding, that's enough circumstantial proof that she was a basula, and that's enough to entitle her to a ksuva of 200 zuz. Umodra, the Yeshua, the Obama, the Chaver, I suppose, a little bit weiter. So remember, then the end of the Mishnah already goes on to a totally separate topic, which we dealt with yesterday. Rabbi Yeshua agrees that what? That when a person says to his friend, oh, by the way, this field, you know this field that I have? I bought it from your father. That he is believed. Remember, we spoke about this yesterday extensively, that even Rabbi Yeshua, who rejects Migo in the previous parak, agrees that there's Migo over here. Why? Because Apesh Sha'asar, who Apesh Shehitir. So the Gemara says, Listnei, Mod Rabbi Yeshua, Ba'omer Lechaveiro. Why? So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Why don't you reframe the case like this? Why do you have to deal with the case of where the field belonged to his father? Why don't you just say that Rabbi Yeshua agrees in the following case? Ba'omer Lechaveiro, Sadezu Shalcha Haisa, this field used to belong to you. And I bought it from you. And therefore, again, a person should be believed when he makes that statement. To which the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Meaning what the Gemara is asking is, why frame this as a case of where I bought the field from Reuven's father? Why don't you just say it's a case of where I bought the field from Reuven? Mishum de kabay lemisni seifa, because we want to say at the end of the Mishnah, im yesh edim shehi shalo, if there are edim, that it really belonged to the original owner, v'hu omer lekachtia mimenu, and ultimately, again, I say that I bought it from him, eino ne'eman, he is not believed. So the Gemara says, hechi dami, so what is the case? Remember, I'm claiming that I am now the owner. I purchased it from Reuven or from Reuven's father. So what's the case? If I've been living there 3 years, meaning I've lived there the years of proper chazaka, then amai lo mehemen, then why would I not be believed? V'idalo achla shnei chazaka, and if I did not eat it for the years, ultimately again of chazaka, I haven't lived there for 3 years, then pshita delo mehemen. So both, meaning, what are we talking about up here? What is the idea of peshas or peshahit here? This should be a very simple case. If I've lived there the requisite years of chazaka, then I have a claim. If I haven't lived there the years of chazaka, I don't have a claim. Ihachi gabi aviv nami. So I don't understand. That's true also then, even in the case where I must say, so now that's true even in the case of where I claim that I purchased this field from Reuven's father. So why am I just simply believed because I made this claim? Again, very simply, if I lived on the field the proper years of Chazaka, then I should own the field. And if I haven't lived in the field for the years of Chazaka, then what? Then I don't own. What does this have to do with Apesh Sha'asar, Hu Apesh Shehitir? To which the Gemara says, Idach L'Shnei Chazaka, Ma'ilo Mehemen, V'idalo Ach L'Shnei Chazaka, Pshidon Lo Mehemen. To which the Gemara says, Bishlam Agave Aviv Mishkach L'Shla. I'll tell you why. In the case of where I'm claiming that I bought this field from Reuven's father, so Mishkachas L'Kigon, Sha'achla Shtayim B'chaye Ha'av, V'achos B'chaye B'no. So we'll say this could be like the case of the following, where I own the field, or I lived in the field for 2 years when the father was alive. Then the father died. Who technically then, quote unquote, inherits the field? The son. Now the son was a minor at the time that his father died, and I lived there for a year under the son. Ukid Rafuna. And the Mishnah is reflecting the position of Rafuna. What does Rafuna say? Dam Rafuna. Ein machzikin b'nichse katan. You cannot establish chazaka while residing on the property of a katan. Afilu higdil. Even if what? Even if the katan grew up. Now, I must say, this is a very important yisod. Rav Huna holds like this, that if you have a situation where, let's say, again, I'm living on property for 2 years, father dies, and then minor child inherits the property. So let's say I live on another year, 3 years of chazaka. That third year does not count as chazaka. Why? Because the potential owner is a minor, and a minor doesn't know to object. Rav Huna takes a step further. Even if now, let's say the next year, the minor inheritor becomes a gadol, I live on the field for another 5 years. Rav Huna says, that's still not called chazaka. Why? Because since the child, the minor, the inheritor, saw me living there as a katan, he assumed that what? He assumed that it was mine. Therefore, even when he becomes a gadol, he still assumes that it's mine. I mean, he never knows any different because his initial impressions are forged when he's a katan. Therefore, even if you live on that field another 5 years and he becomes a gadol, Rav Huna says that is still not considered to be a chazaka. To which the Gemara says, Rav Huna, mas nisan ala asalash minan. Is Rav Huna coming to teach us? Then a Mishnah. Ibai sema, Rav Huna duke de mas nisan. Yeah, enachinami. Rav Huna is making a diuk in the Mishnah that the case, the particular case of our Mishnah, is a case of where the father died and it was a minor child who inherits the father. And therefore, the Mishnah is teaching us that lamaisa, living on the field for a particular amount of time, does not give you chazaka. Vibai sema afilu higdil. And again, the other possibility is that the Mishnah is teaching me about a case that even when the minor inheritor comes along and inherits the father, even if the child subsequently becomes a gadol, and I am still living on that field, that is still not enough to establish chazaka, because since my original residence on the field was when the new inheritor was a minor, therefore again, his impressions about the field are forged when he's a minor, and there's no way to assume that those impressions are going to change even once he becomes a gadol, and therefore, I have not established chazaka. So the Gemara says, "Vibai seima afilu higdil." Then I would have thought that again, he establishes chazaka even once he becomes a gadol. Kamash malon the nat. So we'll have to stop over here for today. We're kind of leaving off in the middle of this sugya, but just again, so remember where we're leaving off over here. We're just trying to figure out now again about this last case in the Mishnah, and we're trying to figure out what exactly are the details, what exactly are the circumstances, and the chiddush of this last property case. And Meretz Hashem to be continued tomorrow. Just a reminder: tomorrow we also begin again at 5:30. All right. Okay. Try to slip that in. Yeah, 5:45 in Meretz Hashem. Sorry. Okay.